is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello everyone, this is Debbie Powell, Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and I'm over here in the Sonora office, downtown Sonora, UC Cooperative Extension office, right next to Superior Court, and I am talking with Mary Campbell, who's the owner of the garden company. She has a retail outlet landscaping business. You do it all, Mary. We've talked to you before. You have a tremendous amount of energy.
Yes, which I do my best.
But you really specialize in growing native plants, or put it this way, even if they're not native, plants that are well suited to this very specialized area in which we live in. And we're going to talk about today some of your absolute favorites to put in your landscape. And what would be one of them?
Okay, if you want to talk about some of the native plants that I really enjoy, and it's particularly for this area, one of the things that we do a lot here is we have oaks that we have to deal with. So it's a treasure to find plants that can do can grow in a position that's under a native oak that doesn't require a lot of summer water and
tolerates that kind of exposure.
So that's sort of a real treasure to come across. And some of my favorites for that position, I have any of the currants are wonderful for that type of exposure, and they're so pretty, and they're a plant, of course, you know, it being in the genus Ribes, they were, you know, years ago almost eliminated from the wild because of their tendency to have that yellow pine blister rust. They're a host plant for that.
Right,
so the timber industry sort of eliminated a lot of them, but they're such lovely plants, and they usually bloom sometime during the cool season.
Don't they have a berry?
Yes, they do. So they the currants, there's currants and there's gooseberries, both, and then they and they're both different species of varieties. So, but they're some of the berries are more palatable than others. For humans, the birds do basically love all of them, and various other wildlife.
But you can plant those under oak trees.
Yes, they do very well in sort of a dappled light situation, and being native, they can adapt to quite, most of them, I'm going to say, can adapt to quite dry conditions. Also being native, what they will do if they go very, very dry is of course, they'll go summer dormant.
What does that mean exactly, summer dormant?
Summer dormancy. So summer dormancy is built into a lot of California natives because of our tendency to be very, very dry in the summertime. So because plants like to come alive when the conditions are suited for them to be more active in terms of growth. A lot of them will have a growing season during the winter as opposed to during the summer. The summer is probably the hardest time on them, so they go to sleep.
Okay.
So in the case of a currant, what that means is that they will tend to drop leaves. Some plants will drop half their leaves. This is very, very typical with ceanothus, for example.
And people are mistakenly thinking probably that they're dying.
Right. That is really important to know about California natives, that they, very many of them have that ability. And I'm going to call it an ability because what it means is that they can get through periods of drought and heat, you know, on their own without help from us.
Okay.
So, but what it looks like is, yes, it can look that way.
Could be mistaken.
The plant is dying or has died in the middle
right.
of summer. Or as the warm season approaches sometimes, Very common is, like I was saying, with ceanothus, you'll mm-hmm. see them drop about a third of their leaves at right after bloom is finished.
Really?
About a third of them will go turn yellow and fall off. And
oh,
that's
my
kind
goodness.
Of a, an adaptation to, like, okay, I've done my blooming, I've done my fruiting, now I'm going to go to sleep for a little while. I'm going to conserve energy to get through the summer.
Okay.
So that's pretty typical. You'll see
I think the plant that probably maybe most people recognize, and they would recognize the summer dormancy, is buckeye.
Oh, yes.
Right.
So that's a very obvious and readily available example of summer dormancy.
Okay,
and they do it early, you know, and they'll do it quite early, even before we get to summer.
Yes, they will.
So basically that plant is it's beautiful, but what it cares about is blooming and fruiting. And
right.
that's it. And once it's done its job there, it's saying, okay,
I'm
go
going
to sleep
dormant.
Till next
yeah.
year.
So when does the currents, when do they
it depends.
Typically? Okay.
It depends a lot on the conditions. So in an irrigated situation or a situation where they have natural access to water, they won't tend to go, they may not go somewhere
okay.
At all. But
because they don't need to.
Because they don't need to. So some plants are like that, where they're very tuned into the environmental conditions. So, and some are just almost, no matter what you do, will do it, such as the buckeye. The buckeye, you can keep it going a little longer if you provide water for it, for example.
Okay.
But pretty much you're not going to get it to keep its leaves past midsummer. I mean, that's going to be pretty,
right.
that's going to be pretty
right.
tough to do. It's programmed to do
mm-hmm.
it that way. Just
sure.
Like. So anyways, that is one of the things with the ribes or the currants, is that many of them are able to grow in an area where they can go summer dormant without water, you know, so suitable then
and
for
still
planting
survive.
And still survive.
Which
and often
is
they'll re-leaf out in the fall. They'll get
oh,
leaves again as soon as they
really?
Get moisture. Yeah.
Oh.
So it's kind of a different pattern than what we're used to.
Okay.
Because
What about elevation? Where can you grow these plants? Where's maybe the lowest? Because it is a pretty plant.
Right, they're beautiful.
I really like it.
So there's a few different species that I grow, for example. I grow, what do I have? At least three different species at this point. And so golden currant, which is Ribes aureum, that one is actually probably the most sun and heat tolerant of all of them. It is, you can grow that down as far as you like.
Okay.
As far as you like down in elevation. I would say, I mean, at least in our
so
area.
So they call it golden.
It's that's a golden
currant.
Current.
Is it golden somewhere?
It has a beautiful yellow flower
oh,
in the springtime. So
pretty.
Yes, they're quite lovely, and of course I don't have to say the hummingbirds love these plants.
Oh.
So what's neat about them too is that they have. So I have chaparral currant, which is another
okay.
one that is pretty suited to chaparral type conditions. So dry.
Mm-hmm.
Hot conditions. It also loves being in part shade. It also can grow in other conditions where it's more lush. It'll just do more.
Wow.
And that one blooms quite early, so it blooms even sometimes as early as the fall, often early winter.
Okay.
And then, so the pink flowering currant then is one that will bloom next, which is, that one is sort of, it grows all the way down to sea level. It grows all over the state of California, really.
Okay.
And that one will bloom next in the succession. So it blooms a little bit, I would say early spring rather than late winter.
Okay.
Or midwinter. It blooms from late winter to mid-spring. And then I do also grow, actually I've grown four. So far. So I also grow Sierra currant, which
oh.
is a local native. And it grows all the way up to quite high elevation. It one of the prettiest stands of it that you might see if you're walking around Pinecrest in the spring.
Love
when it's
Pinecrest.
And it's in bloom. Early summer, probably for it in Pinecrest. It grows there. And one place it grows together with horsetail. And it is just a stunning
oh.
combination when the currant is in bloom.
Right.
It almost looks like a floral arrangement. Some
oh.
modern floral arrangement. Very, very pretty. And that one grows in a number of different places, but it's very local here. So anybody who is saying, you know, I'm at 6,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
say, I want to grow this, I want to grow something, this would be a great plant for them. I don't know that I would recommend that one for, say, Copperopolis or, say, the valley
would
floor.
Would you recommend maybe one of the other
absolutely,
currents?
Absolutely. The Golden Current would be great.
Because Copperopolis, that is...
It
is so hot.
It's
but
very
so
hot.
So is Jamestown. Jamestown is very hot.
Yeah, and the Golden Current can do that type of position. The soil that is in Copperopolis can be tricky, so you got to pay attention to that as well. But the just in terms of the heat and mm-hmm. the dryness, it can take that. It's actually
okay,
quiet. And it can take. It's one that can take even, you know, being against a wall and getting reflected heat and things like that.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So that one, like I say, that's probably the most heat and drought tolerant of the California native currents is the Golden Current.
Okay.
That I can think of offhand.
And that those are hard plants to find, something that can tolerate the heat, the drought, mm-hmm. and partial shade.
Yes,
that's a tough gem
when you can find
those.
Yeah. Another native that does well in a position like that is the Pacific Coast Iris.
The Pacific Coast Iris.
Yeah, they're quite adaptable to being in an oak position. They do like their soil to be a.
And aren't they also deer resistant?
They are quite.
Have you ever seen a deer eat one?
Never. I have not yet seen a deer eat one.
Okay, I've never seen one.
Yeah, that I mean it would be highly rare for them to eat any of the iris. I've seen where young deer have experimented.
Seen that too.
Yeah, but that's always a different thing. If you see deer eating plants in August, and they're eating things that usually they don't eat, please don't consider that to be an indication of a forever situation. Usually, that's two things: the deer are incredibly hungry at that time because they're at the end of the summer. Most of their native forage has been dry and dead for a long time, or not real palatable.
Oh, right, that's a key word. They just don't like it.
Yeah, it gets to a point because the drier it gets, the mm-hmm. more tannins and things build up.
Right.
So, if we have irrigated gardens, oh my goodness, that's like a candy store. And so even things that are considered safe, you know, to plant
typically considered safe.
In at that particular time of the year, you can see things get chewed a little bit because also the young deer are out experimenting with stuff.
Oh yeah, and
so
they just don't know any better.
They don't know any better sometimes, and so. But yes, iris are all species of iris are generally considered quite deer resistant, and so the Pacific Coasts are wonderful. They're all different hybrids.
And where would you put those in a garden? Does it need full sun?
Again, they're a dappled shade.
They could be dappled shade.
In our climate, they do very well in a dappled shade type position.
And they will still bloom.
And they bloom very, very well. They do better in dappled shade than they do in full sun here.
So,
in this climate anyway, we have very
right.
hot summers. And so those, there are many, many hybrids, many, many different varieties of the Pacific Coast hybrids. But some are very strong and some are not as strong. It depends, you know. Get me talking about
you mean
the whole,
vigorous? You mean as
yes,
far as
invigorous.
Being able to thrive?
Yes, and just being having natural vigor. So you get me talking about the whole hybridization thing, and that's another...
It's another topic.
It's a whole
isn't
other
it?
Topic for another day, but some of them are quite strong. I think one of the strongest is one of the ones that I grow is Canyon Snow, which is a white flowered form.
Oh.
But it is so vigorous. You know, it can take a lot.
We like that.
Yes.
We like strong plants,
and it is a strong one.
Oh,
probably
good.
One of the strongest that I know. But
is it completely white? Is it snow white?
It's white, but then it has, of course, has the yellow
okay.
on the inside of the,
right.
the petals. So,
okay.
A little bit of yellow in there. Quite
oh,
lovely.
Pretty.
Quite beautiful.
That sounds beautiful.
They're beautiful, and especially in a dappled light area, the white mm-hmm. blossoms are so nice. Another plant that's wonderful in that kind of position is the bush anemone. So
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Those are absolutely fantastic. Look a lot like a camellia, like a single camellia in their bloom
right,
to me.
Right. No, they're absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, where would you plant those?
Again, same position.
Same position. Mm-hmm.
Dappled light.
Okay.
Preferably. Or partial sun. So morning sun would be fine, you know, and then you could move into, you. Again, our climate, probably you'd want to avoid that hottest part of the midday sun. But even that plant will even adapt to it eventually. But
right.
I like to give them what they like the best and what they perform the best in, and that
sure.
would be a dappled light end or partial sun type position.
Okay.
And it's a lovely woodland plant. I mean,
what about elevation?
Elevation
wise, right.
So it's great all through the foothills.
Okay.
It performs very, very well all through the foothills. I would say all the way up to probably as high as people are planting things.
You know what? One of the misconceptions is, or the confusion, I'm going to say, use the word confusion, is when to water these plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have asked you about the, say, for instance, the iris. When
mm-hmm.
when would you water it? If it's growing under an oak tree, then
mm-hmm.
you're not necessarily wanting to water it
right.
during the summertime.
Right. So that is the idea. So on its own, that plant can take more summer water if it's given it, you know.
Okay. So it's tolerant.
It's tolerant, as is the bush anemone. So
okay.
those guys are tolerant of summer water, but what they're also able to do is to go more or less dry. Now, as for watering under oaks, you know, there are people who are absolute purists and they say never. There are people who will say, okay, three times a summer is fine. And that's kind of where I stand with it. You know, some of these plants really like to get washed off during the
uh-huh.
summer. So the dust just
oh.
kind of washed them off.
Right.
And wet them down a little
uh-huh.
bit, you know. So it's not like necessarily a watering. One thing about this is that if you're going to let a plant go droughty through the summer, meaning no additional water, you are going to need to get it established before you allow that to happen. And the plant
oh,
will
good
tell
point.
You when
good
that
point.
Is. I mean,
how will you know?
Okay, so this is a tricky one, right? And it's going to be individual. You can't really say, you can kind of take certain species and say, okay, it's roughly this long, but it's going to depend so much on your soil conditions, on your, you know, your exposure. It's going to depend on so many different factors. So I would take it on an individual basis with each plant. I have found that plants that tend to be quite drought tolerant, such as, you know, manzanitas or things that have a very strong root system, a big, large root system, they depend on that for their drought tolerance. So they're going to take a little bit of time to get there.
Okay.
Because they have to develop that giant root system.
Typically, we try to tell everybody, usually, if you're going to give a ballpark or just kind of a general comment, we tell everybody it takes 2 years to get established.
Mm-hmm.
But could it be with some of these plants it might take longer?
It might.
Okay.
And some of that can depend on the soil conditions. How easy is it for the roots to get through and to actually create that system? Some plants are going to take a little longer because they're going to have to get through a whole bunch of shale or something before they get to something that they can tap into moisture into. So it really is important to just listen to the plant. Watering, in terms of, obviously, when a plant is first planted, you're going to water. That's the first thing
right.
you got to know. Is I don't care what is going on, it can be raining. You're going to water it when you plant it, because that is about getting the soil in contact with the roots. Not really about water at that moment in time.
Well, that, you know what, that is a great statement.
Yeah.
And we think completely different.
Yeah.
We think it's all about the water is going to be entering the root system and going up to the plant, which it will do.
Sure.
But you're talking about
settling
something
soil.
A little bit different.
Yeah. So no matter what it is, you got to get it watered in. I mean.
And that's going to settle the soil.
Settles the soil around the root ball so there's contact. You don't want to have a bunch of air pockets down there, right?
Okay.
So that's the first thing. If you're planting natives, and you're planting natives in the fall, which is really the ideal, I mean, for almost all of them.
When you say the fall, what months would that be?
That would be, and again, it's a little bit variable because of the weather patterns, but mostly you're going to be looking at early September.
Okay.
And that's probably the ideal time. So the air has begun to cool down. The soil is still warm. That's the ideal time, right?
So the roots still are going to be growing a little bit in the warm soil.
But they're not dealing with the hot, you know, August 1st air.
I know.
You know, the air started to cool down
some. And the nighttime air is cooling down.
Cooling down in the nighttime.
Yes.
But they still have some warmth in the soil. That's probably the ideal time. But you can obviously plant if the plant is acclimated, you can plant it right through. I mean, really,
October,
honestly.
November,
I would say
December,
through the whole year.
Through the whole year.
If it's acclimated, really, there's really not a lot you're gonna cause.
Okay.
I mean, the one exception that I always bring up to that is the saturation of the soil. So a lot of us have clay. You know,
right.
Pretty much all of us. Mm-hmm. There's a few people who are sitting on a pocket of decomposed granite. But mostly we have clay-based soil. And in the if we haven't had a lot of rain and get very saturated, you really don't want to work the soil at all. It's best to leave it alone when it's saturated.
Okay.
But other than that, if a plant is acclimated, I mean, it's dormant when it wants to be dormant. And the only change it's going to make, so if you go out and you buy a plant today that's sitting in a pot that is dormant, and
mm-hmm.
you're saying, I want to plant it today. The only difference that you're going to create by putting it in the ground is that the roots actually can begin to expand. They're not going to, whether it's sitting next to where you're going to plant it in the pot or in the ground, the roots are actually a little bit more insulated in the ground.
And, oh, you're right.
And
rather than being in a pot.
As long
sure.
as it's dormant. So I think we're so used to planting plants that are not at the same stage that we're at, that we've come to this idea that, you know, you can't plant them at certain times of the year because you're pulling it out of a greenhouse. Obviously, I'm not talking about tender annuals.
Right.
I'm not talking
right.
about
that's,
those.
That's completely different.
It's a completely different thing.
We're talking about plants that, in essence, are either perennial, or they're in perennial, meaning they live year after year, or
mm-hmm.
they could be small shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all
plants. Anything hardy,
right.
anything cold tolerant for this
okay.
time of year, or for, you know, if you're going to plant through the cool season,
mm-hmm.
the cold season,
right?
Then you're going to just want to make sure it's a hardy plant. So basically, my line is there are plants that are within your zoning,
okay,
but you're at the very extreme edge of it. Say so if that's marginal for you, so say it's hardy in zones 7 through 10 and you're zone 7, you might want to wait on that one till the spring because it's right at
okay.
the edge. You're right at the edge. You might give
iffy.
It a bigger shot.
Yeah.
A better shot if you wait till the spring
right.
When it's
okay.
warmer. So then it's
mm-hmm.
going to have the biggest root system and be the most established it can be before it has to deal with the cold part of the year again. You know, and especially
okay.
if you're pushing a plant. Say it's, you know, zone 7 through 10 and you're in like 6 or something. Okay, so none of us are in zone 6 here. But I'm just saying, you know, that if you're pushing it outside of its comfort zone, definitely then you probably want to wait till
okay.
the spring. But for most things that are well within, you're
mm-hmm.
well within, and if as long as it's in the same stage, there's really no reason not to put it in
okay.
the ground. There's we always have that one weird time of year, like now, when
uh-huh.
we get that sort of false springs that happen.
Oh, I know.
And
right now we are.
Right, and things will start to push a little bit of growth,
sure.
and then the frost comes through and burns
mm-hmm.
it off. And sometimes that can be risky for plants, depending on how far they get pushed. But that's going to happen whether it's in the ground
right.
or
right.
in a pot.
It's going to happen.
It's
no
going to happen
what.
Either way.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, if you've got a plant, you might as well get it in the ground.
Right, that's true.
With that exception with the soil. So
okay. But I do have to ask you another question. We've been talking about plants that do well in dappled shade,
mm-hmm.
or partial shade would be another way to call it. What would be a plant that can tolerate that hot sun? I mean, what if you're on a, say for instance, I'm going to give you the worst scenario, the west side of a property. We have a former master gardener that had a piece of property outside of Tuttletown, and he measured the temperature right about the soil, and he claims it was 120.
Right.
I know. So
I've seen that out Jacksonville Road area.
I know. It's brutal.
Incredible.
It's brutal.
So one of my favorite plants that will tolerate a position like that is a Cleveland sage. So that's one of my favorite
Cleveland
natives.
Cleveland
sage. So,
okay. So a salvia.
Salvia clevelandia.
Okay.
And it can be a little on the tender side for cold. That's one of the ones can be a little bit tender if you're at a higher elevation. You're at a higher elevation, you may not be worried so much about that brutal heat. But for, you know, Copperopolis, Jacksonville Road, those kinds of places where we were talking about,
right, right.
It's a perfect plant for you. And There's a cultivar that's name is Pozo Blue, but the reason that I mention Pozo Blue in that setting is because it is considered a Cleveland sage, but that one it has a little bit of extra, a little step higher of cold tolerance, so it's actually a good one for
interesting.
Us up here. It's probably one of
could
the best choices.
Could somebody grow it at Twain Hart?
You could.
Okay.
You could. It's been actually quite amazing. The other plant in that setting is another salvia, the Bee's Bliss, which is another one similar. It's a hybrid between two different species, and that one is natural enough to where they're not even 100% sure, as far as I know yet, which two species.
Oh, really?
Have hybridized to create it. I think the generalized thought is that it's actually Cleveland as well, Cleveland sage.
Okay.
So salvia clevelandii and also the creeping sage, so Sonomensis, Salvia Sonomensis.
How interesting.
So that grows like a ground cover, but a tall ground cover, about a foot and a half tall, and it gets real wide.
Beautiful texture. So about a foot and a half tall, and then would it be like 3 feet wide?
6 feet.
Six feet? So a foot and a half tall and 6 feet wide?
Yeah, about 6 feet across.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe more.
That's amazing.
It's a relatively new one, and I avoided it for a long time because initially they went out and said, oh, it's zone nine, and I'm like, oh, it's just not hardy enough, right? I have seen that thing perform like gangbusters at our little retail location there, as I've told you before.
Yeah.
It's a quite a cool...
The one that's at the C&W?
Yeah, at C&W Supply.
Supplies.
There. So that spot is quite cold, and the plants that sit there through the winter, their entire root ball will often be completely frozen.
Oh my gosh.
Like a block of ice. And I've watched that plant go through that and not even flinch. So I'm going, okay.
Well, not every plant is going to survive that.
No, well, not, but the ones that are there do amazingly well.
Oh my gosh.
They do amazingly well. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that one I know has more cold tolerance than was initially thought. And it's done quite well in that regard. So, and that's another one you could put in that type of position too, where it's real.
How many types of salvias do you grow?
I really can't tell you at this point.
Okay.
I have a lot of salvias, and the reason for that is that they tend to do quite well in this area. So I have, in addition to the native sages, I have some Mediterraneans. Those also are quite adapted, so all of the autumn sages and those type of things, a lot of those are Mediterraneans. And then there's I have a salvia that is actually a Mexican species that is quite hardy, but looks a lot like a autumn sage, which is actually a southwestern plant, and it looks a lot like that, but it's it grows a little bit differently. And so I have a lot of salvias, a lot of penstemons too.
Oh, you've got a lot of penstemons?
A lot of penstemons.
Oh my
gosh. A lot
of
species penstemons. So, and it's native penstemons, things that are a little bit...
Penstemons are beautiful, and so are salvias.
They're all so
different. Blooming. Well, with the salvias, depending on the variety, how long do they bloom for?
Yeah,
is it...
It depends.
It just
entirely.
Depends on the variety.
It depends entirely. The autumn sages, like I mentioned before, and those southwestern plants, that's where they're from, is the southwest. And they, but they'll bloom all season. They bloom, they start in the spring and they don't stop until...
So they're blooming all summer?
All summer.
Oh my gosh.
All summer.
It's wonderful.
They're fantastic. And then they hit their biggest bloom scene is in the fall, in the autumn. So
that's the autumn sage. Yes.
And then, I mean, there's all kinds of combinations there and hybridizations that have gone on there, you know, but they're just amazing how they go. So,
well, I hate to tell you, I can't believe this has happened once again, but we ran out of time. If somebody wants to reach you, the best way to do it is to probably get to your website initially.
Yes.
And
if you get to the website, it's gardenwhereyouare.com.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of contact information there. The retail space right now, until the end of February, we're only open on Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 4. That's pretty minimal, but I'm doing a lot of growing right now because we grow all the plants. And if you want to reach me, there's contact information on the website. You can call me anytime and we'll,
perfect.
And
perfect.
We'll try to hook you up with some plants.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mary. You're a wealth of information. This is wonderful. And we'll have you back again, definitely. So thank you so much.
Well,
bye-bye.
You.